have to be in our best of form to maintain the decorum. I know I haven't had my breakfast yet, so. Yes. I met the Honorable Ramu Dibe on the way. She's here. All right. I'll just allow you to settle and then we can proceed. Two interviews now, break for tea, and then take the remaining two, which hopefully will take us to lunch. And immediately after lunch, we'll come back for deliberation. All right. Professor Gumbi, welcome to the ad hoc committee appointed to appoint, to recommend the appointment of a new public protector. Thank you. I would like to start by apologizing for running a few minutes late. I am partly to blame. Yesterday I was to blame for a different reason. Today I'm to blame because there was an SABC interview that I had to go through relating to this process before I came. But let's kick off. I'm going to start by asking you a general question. Yes. All right.
I must disclose that I know Prof. He was elected me at university.
Can I propose that you come to that when you during your slot? All right, so for now it's still the chairperson's slot. Nice to be a chairperson. You get to speak first, you know, and take all the best questions. Anyway, welcome once again. Like I said, I'm going to start with a general question to you, and that is to ask you to... given the role and responsibilities of public protector, which you obviously are aware of, what is it? Apart from the fact, and before I proceed, let me also congratulate you for being one of the eight candidates that have been shortlisted, and hence you are here for this interview, which in itself is an indication that this collective must have seen some potential in you. But having said that, the ball is now in your court to convince this grouping that in fact they were not wrong in identifying you as one of the strong contenders for this position. Now, if I were to ask you, what is it that Professor Gumbi would bring that would be different, that should set him apart from any other candidate for this position? What is it that you would offer? Just say a little bit about your qualifications, your experience, your background, and of course, what is it that you think all of that makes you the best candidate?
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Just to start the ball rolling, I've seen the advert that a person who will be appointed to this position must be a godly Christian. The re-advert that was coming out on the 31st of August on the internet said he must be a godly Christian. So I feel that all the qualities that I have will be godly Christian. I was born in 1947 in Durban, I studied up to matric, but all the university education I did it on my own when I left school after matric. I must say that I hold quite a lot of diploma in law, because before it was not easy for you just to study a degree in UNISA. You had to start with diploma. So I worked myself up when I was in the public service. When I was a court interpreter, then I moved up to be a prosecutor, up to principal magistrate. I've been involved as also in academic field as a lecturer up to professor level, private practice. I've been an advocate. I've been a court assessor. I've been an attorney with a right of appearance in a high court. I've worked myself all the time with the communities. You'll find that although at times I moved out of teaching, going to private sector, but I always go back to teaching. Recently, a few years back, I went out to be a municipal manager to see how things, service delivery occurs at a municipal level, because the people in the community asked me in a university to go out and assist them. But when the term ended, I went back again to university, because I felt that my passion for teaching students, especially in law faculty, is very high. I could see the struggle that I had, the long road that I took just to qualify to have an LLB in my pocket. It took me more than 20 years because of the system at that time. It was very difficult for that. I've been a victim in other, a political victim in other structures, in other spheres. For example, the 1976 burning down of University of Zululand, we were harassed and detained by police there. And in 1980, when I was a senior magistrate, because of political activities, I decided to resign from being a magistrate and went to teach at university. Also, in 1984, we had a problem when students boycotted graduation. We were also, as lecturers, harassed that. We were instigators of this. Police harassing us. And I remember I was detained even for a day. In 1985, when I came back, I worked for University of Mopotelswana, where we were detained and deported, because it was felt that we were agents that were inside the university. But I don't know, because we were not tried in a court of law about that. And then in 1996, I had a problem where council appointed me as a transformation officer for the University of Zululand. When the management, we were not eye to eye with the management about this, because there was a feeling that everything was just normal. But I felt that all people must be treated equally within the university. All people must have access. Even students, workers, everyone must have a right within the university to express his feeling. But I fell on the wrong side of this in such a way that I fell at the end of the contract. I must not renew my contract, and then I left the university to go to private practice. I've seen myself more on a community-based, sympathetic to the to people on a broader, at grassroots level. That's why even now, the Women's Forum of WSU have contact me time and again to assist them in matters of women, youth, disabled, because I felt that some of the higher institutions, not particularly WSU, are not really sympathetic to the cause of these people, the youth, the women, the disabled. You find that the university is very difficult even for students who are disabled to study there, because it has been constructed in such a way that there are steep steps and the students, disqualified students, is to assess education. I have introduced that university, what is known as a community-based program known as street law. Every Friday, a group of students will go out to the community to teach them about the fundamentals of law in such a way that people must not look at law as a pie from the sky, but something that they can also try and understand and exercise. For example, people in the rural areas, those who are not getting their social grants, those who are not getting their pensions, those who are having problems with municipality, especially in service delivery. The students have really helped a lot on this area. To go further, perhaps, Mr. Chairman, I must say that the position of public protectors, I've said that there was an internet saying a person to be appointed here must be a godly Christian. I feel that I'm a really godly Christian, and I'm a person who is very impartial, is very independent, and I can assure you that this office, as it has been remarked, that it must struggle to keep its independence away from corporate government, away from politicians or political parties. I will make sure that this office is truly independent and the decisions that are taken in this office will be taken without fear, favor, or prejudice. It must be an office that really, the core values of this office must be that of impartiality, courtesy, empathy, service-orientated, where government actions, like take for instance a case in Pinetown where a citizen of South Africa committed suicide because he was called a foreigner when he applied for an ID. I'm looking to such cases that we need to make the office efficient and effective so that all these abuses that are done, either government officials or because of discourteous carelessness or done by state corporations or state council or anyone that is directly or indirect on state affairs must be looked at and come up with an unbiased report, a report that will be open for inspection by anyone, and not unless there's confidentiality. But as we all know that the Office of the Public Protector cannot investigate or report on judges and magistrate decisions, including sentences, as well as private acts of individuals, as well as private companies, as well as judges and lawyers who are not employed by the state. But I must say that the interpretation of the jurisdiction of this office cannot be restricted, the act to be narrowed. It must be looked at broadly so that many cases are covered. As we know that this office only started in our country in 1995. The first public protector was Advocate Barco and then Advocate Mshwana. Because this office must strengthen constitutional democracy of any government. We see before 1983, European countries, very few of them had this office. Others call it ombudsman, public defender, governor of the governors. And we are grateful that in South Africa, the Public Protector Act 23 of 1994 came even before our constitution. So our source of legal source is the Public Protector Act 23 of 1994, the Constitutional Act, as well as Executive Members Act of 1998. I must say that the problem that at times I have with the office is that it is not visible and accessible. If you look at some of these offices, look in Pretoria, the head office is at 9th floor at a place which is just about Menlo Park. You look in Durban, the office is on the 21st floor. You look at other areas like Cape Town and Northwest. The office is situated there at the corner of the street, so it's easy for the people to have an access there. But now to put an office right in the 21st floor, what about people from rural areas? Because our most suffering people, the majority of our people are in rural areas. Now coming to a big town, going to climb a high building, coming from rural areas, it becomes very difficult. Although we make arrangements that people can write, can send facts, can do that, But it is very important to have a contact with the people. I've seen that the present public protector has started clinics in three of the provinces, which I think is very good that those clinics, but what is important is to have those clinics being effective. They must go to the rural areas where starting is good, but what is the work that these clinics are going to do? We must put down the work, otherwise they must not just be there just for the sake of clinic, but we must see what work has been done by these clinics and assess them. Well, as I've said, that the office is, it's created in terms of the constitution and the law, but yearly it must submit a report to the National Assembly stating what has been done, and also if there are matters that the office would like the National Assembly to intervene on, the office must bring that to the attention of the National Assembly. Everyone is free to contact this office, even if the matter is not going to be done by this office, but other agencies. There's no reason why this office cannot refer those people to other agencies. I see now, on top of all Chapter 9 institutions, the new, maybe sui generis institution of the president on the hotline. So it's going to add to all what is being done by this Chapter 9 institution, including the public protector, which is, I think is a very good step that has been done by the government. I think I'll stop there, Chair, not unless there's something else you'd like me to...
Yeah, certainly I'd like to follow on some of the points that you highlighted. First of all, in relation to outlining the mandate of the office, there is this discourse about whether this office is essentially an advice office to which aggrieved citizens who have not been pleased with their ability to access public services would come to seek recourse on an individual case basis versus the office are looking more at the institutional functioning of various state organs to say to what extent are those organs living up to the expectations. In other words, doing an assessment of the institutions themselves as opposed to resolving individual cases. I would like to hear your comment on that, and linked to that is the issue of the question whether the public protector in the current constitutional and legislative arrangements really has teeth to effectively discharge its mandate in a manner that is outcomes based and it's not merely an institution that looks and makes comments, and that's basically all that happens. What is your comment on that?
Well, thank you, Chair. I think the most criticism against this office is that it is too much in line with the government and political patterns, but I feel that the criticism at times builds up. If a person criticizes you and something is helping you in the other way, so that you can build up yourself and prove that you are not as he was thinking. If people praise you all the time, most cases people who praise you are your enemies. Because even when you go down, they don't wake you up and say, no, you are going down now because we are not doing this. But if they criticize, you are always on yourself and try to disprove this. This office, I think if there is something tangible that people really come up with, each and every case now to generalize and say the office is like this, I will have a problem on that because, I'm speaking from outside the office, not from inside the office. I don't know what are the dealings inside. Maybe I might say the criticism is not standing when in actual therapy it is there because I've not been exposed inside the office. But I must really say that criticism is very good. And, it helps to build that particular office so that it becomes, it stands on its toes. But leaving it like that, at times it depends on you, on person who is there in that office or people who are there in that office, and depends on the direction that they are taking. But it might be happening that they might be explaining themselves that we are not in that situation, but we are like this. So now it becomes very difficult, not unless there is a particular case that we can dissect on its own merits and say, here the public protector really did not satisfy the expectations of the people, but it worked in the other way around. I think that is very important that the reports of the public protector be made public so that if people are not happy, they criticize those reports. I see recently there was a court decision where a report of a public protector was taken for review, and that court review rejected the finding of the public protector, which was very good. I support that. That is what democracy must be. Otherwise, if we shelve things underneath or we make people to be so independent in such a way that they are above independence, that will not help. We are all under the Constitution and the law. If the Constitution and the law says it, you cannot be independent more than that. So I feel that the fingers pointed at the public protector office must really go on and be there, or even in many cases, so that the office can come up and put its own case. They always talk about the altem partem rule. Here, the other side. There are always two sides in a coin. If you are carrying a one rand, there's a head, there's a tail. So you must have these two stories so that you know exactly what is the real story. Otherwise, you might be hearing criticism only coming from one side and the other party not head the other party. That will make the other party also to come with this case so that it can be seen who is really telling the truth.
Just a follow-up on the point you touched on now relating to the courts reviewing the decisions of the public protector. And of course, you did indicate that the public protector cannot review a decision of a court. But what about the public protector investigating another Chapter 9 institution or another constitutional institution other than a court? Say, for example, the case where the previous public protector investigated allegations relating to the prosecuting authority, which is a Chapter 8 institution. What would be your opinion about that? Is that constitutionally correct, or do you have a different view?
Thank you, Chair. My view is that there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong on that because the Constitution clearly states that it's the court's decision, including sentences for the judges and the magistrate. A public prosecutor is not a court or a judge. It might happen that people complain that my case or the docket of the police was not properly investigated. I've got a complaint about this running up to the prosecutor. So the public protector can come in there to look at whether all the steps were taken up and the cases are not withdrawn by the public prosecutor unfairly to the detriment of the complainant. I see here in the strategic plan of the public protectors are complaining almost on the same wavelength that they are under threat by, at times, the threats when they had a strategic plan, that some of the threats and opportunities is that complainants threatened members of the public protectors because the cases that were reported have been thrown out or are not proceeding, which is quite proper because really a complainant will come up and bring up a very confidential matter which people are afraid to bring it forward. But he will do this, and then at the same time, maybe afterwards, his identity will be known. Now, if the prosecutor now is going to stall, or the processes up to the prosecutor are going to stifle this, and the complainant is not given what was expected, the public protector has got all the right of investigating this and find out where was the problem. I think perhaps that's why people who have been practicing have been advocates, have been magistrates, have been attorneys. They know all the processes inside the court. So it will not be foreign for the public protector to investigate what happened, where things didn't go right, if you really know the inner workings of the prosecutor's office.
And just finally from my side, is there anything that Professor Gumbi, I notice you're a real gentleman. I have a sense that you should have developed the art of relating to people and making people have confidence in you. Just from even the tone of your voice. But is there anything that Professor Gumbi would want to bring to the attention of the committee, which is of a nature that might make us think twice before we appoint you? And if there is such a thing, how do you explain yourself out of it? Is there any particular context in which you would want the committee to understand that particular issue?
Well, thank you, Chair. In fact, when I look at especially the Office of Public Protector, especially, and myself, I felt that the systems that have already been put there, we need to visit these systems and see whether they're efficient and effective so that this office can play a prominent role in the community. As I'm saying, I'm worried about visibility of this office at some of the regions. It's really not visible. I see there at Bishaw, it's at a place called, building called Unati House, and even says it's at the back of Pick and Pay. You know, this is really shocking because it's at the back of a shopping center instead of being in the front of a shopping center. So how is the community going to see this office being at the back of a shopping center instead of front of a shopping center? I would like to revisit the top structure of the public protector. I feel that the top structure is too heavy, too executive.
My question more relates to you as a person.
Yes.
To say, is there anything that you would want to share with the committee that might make the committee have reservations about wanting to appoint you? And if there is such a thing, how do you explain yourself out of it? Is there something that might discourage us from actually recommending you as the best candidate for the position that you might be aware of?
Well,
in other words, the confessions.
Yes. Chair, I don't see anything. I feel I'm a fit and proper person. I'm well qualified. I hold a master's degree from University of Tulane in the U.S. For the last 25 years. I've done a lot of work for the community, not only as a lawyer, but also as a community worker. I've got Well, I'm an honest person. I've got integrity as it is. I always take my decisions without fear, favor, or prejudice. I always like to interact with people. I don't rush to write letters to people asking about this, but I want to bring person to sit down so that we can have a one-to-one discussion about a matter. I always feel that the management style that must be there when I'm there is a collective participatory management style that will make all people to own the decisions that we have taken. Don't look at a person and say, no, this one is junior or what or not. Bring that person. He might be junior because of service or age, but the views that are expressed by this person, I always ask for those views so that we make a collective decision in any position I occupy.
Thank you. Colleagues, let me start with All right, can I start with Mr. Ndapani and then I'll come to Ms. Lamadibe and the rest of the colleagues.
Thank you, sir. I was about to disclose that I know Prof. Prof was my lecturer at university, and we later on become colleagues. That really has got no bearing in these proceedings anyway. Prof, I've got only one question. You were halfway answering it. So you have mentioned some shortcomings, one of which is the location of the offices of the protector. So now coming to the running and performance of duties of this office, what do you think it must be revisited and corrected for the running of the office now?
Thank you, Chair. I think this is an operational matter within the office, which I think I might perhaps be short somewhere. But my feeling is that, as I've mentioned, the top structure of public protector is very heavy. I see there's a public protector, there's a deputy public protector, there's a CEO. Below that, there's a head criminal investigations, head chief operations officer, CFO, communications manager, security and risk. There's nothing talking about research and development. I see in human rights there's an emphasis on research and development. I feel that this office must have an area of research and development. If you don't research, you'll never develop. It means the office, if it does not research, it will always be like that for the next 100 years. But if we emphasize that there must be research and development within the office, that will make the office grow, all the shortcomings, all the challenges that are coming up will be addressed by the office. As I said, the visibility of the office at times, it needs to be revisited so that the office can be accessible to people coming from disadvantaged background. The other, I noticed something also in the office that the complaints form that is being used here is English. Many of our people in rural areas will never understand English. I would suggest at least that if perhaps the regional office of Eastern Cape, you have English and isiXhosa below, so that those who can't read English can read isiXhosa. If it's KZN, they can read. Those who can read English can read English. Those who read Zulu can read Zulu below. But now it's all English, which is very difficult. And when I look at the application form, some people will not even know what is this form about. And the emphasis done on this form, as if it's done by the office, is to look at pensions and IDs. Now, I was shocked to see that this office is only dealing with pensions and IDs when there are so many other issues, especially municipal matters, even education matters. Higher education, there's a lot of cry coming out from staff and students at higher education. I will not mention what are those, but the office needs to be felt even in such areas because there's a lot of suppression of democracy within the country coming out of university. You find a law student, some law students are taught constitutional law, but when you ask him about constitution, he does not know anything because the person who was teaching was just teaching. There was nothing that he was putting inside the student so that she knows her own basic law, what is the basic law. So we need perhaps at times, if this office can be visible in such a way that it can arrange with other universities, perhaps to have slots even at a LLB program. That is very easy to put these slots at universities. Like myself, I know quite a lot of law schools. We can have this slot of a public protector coming in advising university students about the role and duties of public protector. That will help a lot so that that will spread to the community. Otherwise, the office of the public protector must not only members be too much indoors, but they must be outdoors. And also the idea of being in corporate governance with the government and political parties, that should be addressed as a matter of agency and try to put it forward so that it's seen that the office is independent and it works on its own.
Honorable Dapani? You're done. All right. Ms. Samudi, please.
Thank you, Chair. The disadvantage of talking after the chair is that he takes all the food on the plate. Maybe we should advise the chair to come at the end and give the opportunity to members.
You see, I'm trying to push you to be more creative. I want you to ask even better questions than the chair.
Thanks, Chair. On a serious note, Professor Gumbi, I just want to ask you two questions, very short two questions. One, have you ever been committed of crime or maybe appeared in, before court? And then the second one is in your, I think in your outlining of the mandate of this office, you also spoke a lot about, you know, contact with people. Can you elaborate on that? What is it that you think you can improve to be more in contact with the people? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The first question, well, it's been an allegation that I committed crime here and there, but really, there was nothing from the state to prove that I committed that crime. So it means the state has never been successful to bring me before court and try me because it didn't have enough evidence to do this. But the allegations were there. They've never been removed. Maybe I'm still having them even now. Regarding conduct...
What are the allegations about?
Well, those are mentioned regarding 1976 at Tomboy. When the university was bent down, right. I was implicated as one of the instigators.
All right.
Yeah, and also the most serious one was the Mangope one, 1985, where we were detained and deported. We were reported that we want to bend down the university there because it was the Bantustan University. So those were some of the areas where really I was alleged that the law, I'm breaking the law, but there's nothing from the law side that proves that. So I'm still innocent even now. Regarding community engagement, as I was saying, when I look at the Office of Public Protector, besides going to the community with those mobile clinics that have been started by the present Public Protector to move in the areas, we need to go to university and school. You know, those children who are at university and schools, they've got fathers, parents, grannies and what at home. So during holidays or in the weekends, we interact with them so that they are in a position when they go home, they can interact with their parents. So the Office of the Public Protector must come forward, although it's servicing the community, but going into this institution will help a lot that this public protector is known even in areas where people really have never heard of it. Because as I say, really, there are areas where people, you can ask them about public protectors, they will never say, they only say, we only know government, we don't know about this institution. Chapter 9 institution, I think that is the weakness that is there, that they are there, but the people don't really see them or have a feel of them coming in their areas. I was seeing recently, which I can applaud, done by South African Human Rights from Bisho about the Ukutwala custom of Flagstaff and Sirisigi. I heard that few weeks they went there to investigate about this Ukutwala, caring of schoolgirls from school to get them married, which was very good. I thought that public protector would be the first one to jump there. But unfortunately, the human rights have taken that up. I should think that even if another Chapter 9 institution or other agencies have done some investigation and report, the Office of the Public Protector must still be part and parcel of this. It might happen that some of the things have not been picked up, but we hope that the Office of the Public Protector is run by legally qualified people. Those people will be in a better position to pick up some of the loose ends that have not been picked up there. I would like this office to be more community-orientated rather than to be some of those offices. See it as a taxi rank, see it as a bus rank, see it as a train station. That's the Office of a Public Project. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ramandipa.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, Honorable Sibanyoni, and then I'll come to Honorable
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Professor, the first question doesn't carry any mark. Abawa Kumbi, Abawa Bani.
Is your mic on?
Yes. Maybe let me just start by declaring that I was at University of Switzerland, and if I recall well, you used to come and assist at the, we call it the public institute, the college,
yes,
at the university there.
Yes.
That's how we met.
Yes.
You also was a prosecutor at Mbombolo.
Yes.
You might have met Smoy, the person who was the convener of the legal aid clinic.
Yes.
Right. I heard about that. Yeah. Also, when I look at the Public Protector Act, you know, it speaks about a person to be either an advocate or an attorney, and then I notice that you are both. And it also talks about a person of having lectured at a university. I see you have also lectured there. And then, but what is lacking in your CV? You don't say what is the number of years, for example, where you have practiced as an attorney. I see here you mentioned that you were admitted as an attorney in 1981. Yeah, and practice, but you don't say for how many years.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I should start from 1982 when I started to teach after I left to be a magistrate in 1980. Then I taught from 1992. You know, I had this of studying teaching. So my admission as an advocate was 1992 for 5 years. Then 1997, I became an attorney with a right of appearance in a high court up to full-time up to 2003. I was full-time up to 2003. Then after two or three, I went to municipality, but as a municipal manager at the time, I was doing part practicing for another 2 years. But I stopped after that, seeing that it's too heavy, because running up around Mthatha, especially going to East London, Devon, is too, it means you must be away for 2 days or so. But my teaching career is really between about 25 years teaching at university. And perhaps I can add my practice, maybe another 10 years or so. But in all, it could be 25 to 30. Practical experience.
Thank you. No, thank you, no further questions, Chairperson.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Spagnoni. Honorable Zaza.
I think this would be directed at you more than at the candidate. Professor Gumbi made a comment that the advert was really looking for a person, to the fact that that person should be Christian and godly, kind of. I'm not sure whether that was just a figure of speech or that's what the advert actually called for. Because if that's the case, then there's a problem with the advert.
I think it's more the former. I wouldn't imagine an advert of parliament looking for somebody that's of a particular religious persuasion. So I think it's the figure of speech to illustrate the essence of the character of a person who would be a suitable candidate for the office. Secretary, am I wrong?
No, sir, there was no... there was no any mention of religion as far as I can remember too on the advert. So I think maybe Professor Gumbi is like using the figure of speech.
But I can also share, Professor, that I came from Rome yesterday, having visited, accompanied the Speaker of Parliament, and have had the privilege of attending a three-hour mass conducted by the Pope himself. So I can share that kind of sense of, higher level of elevation. All right. Yes, you wanted to comment?
Yes, yes. No, thank you, sir. I was not taking any particular issue. It was a matter of humor that I brought this up. Yes.
But Honorable Jaldo, the floor is still yours. Do you want to ask any? Is that all you wanted to raise? All right. Now, Ms. Michael, you know, it's important to check some of these finer details. You know, she may have looked at the wrong answer. All right, Ms. Michael first.
Chair, it worries me that everyone else is honorable, but I'm Miss.
By
I'm wondering if I've offended you in some way this morning.
I think I'm just
joking.
My legal representative next to you has done his job.
Professor Gumbi, you mentioned that you were a municipal manager.
Yes.
Could you tell us where, for what period of time, and what you felt the biggest problems facing you as a municipal manager were?
Thank you, Chair. I was a municipal manager for the King Sabata Dalinja Municipality, which was formerly Mthatha City Council, 2003 to 2006. The challenges that were there really was interference by councillors. Councillors want to run the administrative part of the municipality. Appointment of staff, tenders, they want to interfere with every side of the municipality manager, because the feeling was that some were feeling that you have not been appointed by them, you have been brought in, and or maybe you came on merit. Now they expect that you must have people that you lean on so that they back you up, which was not in my case. My case had to stand up and stand for what I'm standing for, not to depend that have somebody voted me or didn't vote for me. So I was there to do the work, that's all. But my work there was not really going to be permanent, you know, being a professional person in that situation, really. What really I wanted to be exposed on is service delivery, how municipality functions, especially the new dispensation with the IDP. So I was very interested to see how this will happen, looking at urban areas, rural areas, traditional areas, working hand in hand. But you find that the challenges that are there, most people who are there really are not at the level of trying to bring this together. And the other problem was funding. It will be very difficult for government just to fund overnight all the challenges that are there. And you see people, they want this and that. Some places, infrastructure have collapsed long time ago, roads and all that. So some of those challenges that are there, really, they need massive funding. They need skills. Some of the municipalities don't even have skilled people. You recall there were town boards, and town boards maybe used to have all the retired engineers. Now the new dispensation, you need young blood to be there, which is skilled, but nowhere to be found. Now, these are some of the problems that are there.
Honorable Michael.
Chair, just to follow up on that, I'm an ex-city councillor. In fact, I was chief whip of the official opposition in Swane Metro. And I can tell you my municipal manager hated my guts because all I ever did was interfere. So I feel your pain when it comes to councillors. In normal circumstance, a municipal manager is very much a political appointment, done so by the government that is in power in that particular municipality. How do you feel you will handle political impartiality should you be the successful candidate for the public sector?
Thank you, Chair. When I was looking through at the strategic plan of the Office of the Public Protector, their strategic plan starts from 1st of April 2008 to 31st March 2011. One of the threats that they point out is political interference. And then they say MPs and MPLs are not assisting the office. Now, this is not spelled out how MPs and MPLs are not assisting the office, but it's very strong to say political interference is there. I think what you should do, well, at times, as they are saying that MPs and MPLs who are politicians must assist the office, it depends really on each and every case. You cannot put a blanket and say all MPs are like that or all political parties want to get hold of the office and make it not independent. You as a person must have an integrity, have a resilience within the office and know that these are the parameters that I'm going to work with political parties if I do work with them, or MPs or MPF, but you must not be taken overboard and go to bed with them and say you are doing your work. You must know that if you go to bed with them, you are in problem. Do handle work with them in that particular matter that needs you and working with them, and then that's the end of the day. Then people will know this right from the beginning, right from the start, that this office is a straightforward office. You can't put in influences there. Because in the first place, they are dealing with human beings. Human beings are changing all the time. They bring carrot today, tomorrow is another thing. So right from the beginning, the carrot must be put aside and you work as if there's no tomorrow.
Are you satisfied, Honorable Michael? All right. Honorable George?
Professor Kumbi, you have been, since you started speaking,
emphasizing the point of the public protector being visible, being in the with the community. You even said it must be at the taxi rank, assuming that you were just emphasizing the point of visibility. My question to you is, understanding that there is a lot of work already with the public protector, high-profile cases, low-profile cases, how are you going to balance this thing of, especially in this light that you are also saying that the top heavy, in your view, it must cut. How do you balance what you are saying and practically what is there already? Because at the moment, from what we understand, some of us, that there is so much work there already that they don't want to have. Now, if you talk about cutting and at the same time you want to be in the community, how do you balance this without compromising the very mandate of the public protector?
Oh. Thank you, Chair. In fact, I was talking about restructuring of the top structure, putting in departments like research and development. Some of the work perhaps is done by investigators. They are investigating, they are researching, they are doing development. There must be somebody somewhere who is doing this research. If you are an investigator, like a policeman will go and investigate and that case, but when it comes before court, it gives it to the public prosecutor. But it seems as if the one section is doing all the work. What I'm feeling that should be done is to restructure some of the positions so that all people who don't become executives, but all people go to the field and work. I see there in their report, they write about a company they've taken to assist them in analyzing data. They call it SAP computer company. They've been dealing with cases. Each case has been taking 2 years. They reduce it to 1 year, but now they're aiming at 8 months. It seems as if that program is really working to reduce the burden of work that is being faced. Well, there will be those cases that are heavy, but some of the meager cases and lower cases, maybe 8 months also will be too long. But with this process system they have, I think they've brought it from Sweden or England, I was reading some of the documents, that it has really helped them a lot to reduce the workload. Perhaps if we do these measures, it can justify the restructuring and getting skilled people to do investigations thoroughly. And while other people are doing research behind, and at the same time doing development of the office.
All right. Mr. Ndlovu, you want? Oh, sorry, wait. Are you done? All right. Mr. Ndlovu?
Well, thank you very much, Jefferson. I want to confess, too, that we seem to know each other with Professor Kumbi when he was at Mbumbulu somewhere. We know each other. But it has no bearing whatsoever to what we're doing today. Professor, I wanted to understand two things. One, you know about confidentiality.
In English, they call it a tongue twister.
It is a tongue twister to me. Thank you, Jefferson. It is a tongue. From yesterday, I tried to pronounce it properly. Even in the evening, I tried it, but I always fail.
I think that
there is a person, a young man, a young lady, whoever,
knows that take you out for dinner, for lunch, or whatever, because he wants to find out about things that he knows that thing is coming to you as a public protector. How would you manage it? You know very well it's one of the things that the office should have it. That's the first question. The second question, Professor Gomez, is that according to this, it said you talk about there are decisions that if you take as a public protector, somebody will propose them. Somebody will say you're wrong, totally wrong. You were not supposed to say those things. Oh, I was not supposed to perform according to your information, your report. You were wrong, and so on and so forth. So how would you take it? Will you feel bad about it? Will you shout to the person? Will you go to the person's house and break the door down and so on? How do you react to a person if you say, Ms. Dodger says that, I'm just using her as an example, feel that your recommendation to her organization is totally, completely wrong to what she thinks should be correct? How do you react to that? Those are the two questions, General. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to start with the last one, when everyone has a right over his own view, you cannot chuck a person if he's expressing his own view. But the only thing that he must do is to follow the process. If a person says you are wrong as a public protector, she must apply for a review of your decision. It's not the end of the story. Public protector is not like the constitutional court, where you come at the end of the road. There's no end of the road to the public protector, like the recent case I was talking about, where the public protector was taken to constitutional court and the decision was given against the public protector. So public protector is not a god to himself or to anyone. He's subject to the constitution and the law. So the person who says the decision we've taken is wrong must be in accordance with the constitution as well as the law. But you can't stop a person if he's just saying things on the street or everywhere. He's got the right of saying that. But the right record is to approach the constitution and say, well, according to the constitution, the decision was not the right decision. The other question I've just picked.
Confidentiality
Well, as I've said, I think in our language we call it sifuba or geheim in Afrikaans. In other words, you know, I've been in positions where I remember as a youngster when I was a magistrate, where a local businessman will say, magistrate, come over. Let's have some tea or come for this and that. Only you find that few days, maybe he's going to arrest people working in the shop and say they've stolen goods in the shop. He wants to befriend that particular magistrate. Is the same thing with the public protector. There will be people who want to befriend you so that they get an advantage out of that. What Americans call, there's nothing like American lunch. Because if I take you out for lunch, really there's something there that I expect from you. I expect some kickback from you. That plate of lunch is just not nothing. But you'll have to do something after that. So you must be aware and keep up to your wits. It's something that you cannot tell another person, but it's ingrown inside you. You must know and read your own book and see how things are going to go here and develop. Otherwise, if you just go willy-nilly without any checkups and investigation and all that, you will find yourself being in traps day and again. There's no rule of law to say, take this route, don't take this route, but your consciousness will tell you. If really we are committed, you have got that integrity, that honesty, have that godly Christianity within you.
Lobonglobo, satisfied? All right, I think the last one would be from Honorable Jojo.
must confess I don't know Professor Gumbi. No.
That's also important to disclose.
Thank you, Chairperson. Almost everybody that we've been talking to speaks about this 8 months period in which the cases are dealt with.
Yes.
And from where I sit, I think 8 months is a very, very long time. What would you do to effect a complaints management system that is not done by a private company because it becomes expensive? They've reduced it from 2 years to 1 year, and now they're looking at 8 months, and probably only because they still want to be around to make a living out of the public protector. What would you do to effect a shorter turnaround time for cases, but also so that the public knows that cases are being dealt with timely and that the feedback mechanism exists between the complainant and the public protector?
Well, thank you, Chair. I think you're quite right to say, excuse me, 8 months is too long, but I must say it depends on each case, what is involved in that particular case, and where is the information coming from. Maybe you might find that the information takes long. I remember a few years back I was representing an accused person in court who had killed another one 15 years ago. But he was caught after 15 years when all the documents had been destroyed and everything lost. But he was still was still arrested after 15 years. What he was asking, how is this case coming up after 15 years? So now it will depend on each case, on what evidence is there and how to get that particular evidence. What I think the public protector must do, it must eliminate consultants, if there are consultants, and train their own people. There are a lot of brilliant young people now out of university and everywhere that only need training. If you can train those people right at the beginning, you are going to have problems. Work is not going to pick up because they are still training these people. You are still trying to put them in the system. But in the long run, you will reap a lot because they will be trained. They will be an asset of the organization. The worst part of consultants is that they are not controlled within. They control themselves. They do what they want. They want business. It's like a lawyer taking government work from the state attorney's office. You take time with a case that should have been finished in 1 month, but will be finished in 2-3 years because it's always bringing in money every month. So now is the best thing for public project, get rid of consultants if possible. But you cannot do this overnight. So you look at areas where really you feel that these consultants were not so much required, and they are not really senior consultants that the work cannot be done inside. So train people, get young people from universities, train them inside here, and make them to be part and parcel of this so that they are an asset in this public protector. Consultants are not assets that just fly by night. They will always drain money, and at the end you find that cases are extended for over a long time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there any further questions, Honorable Lalo? That's it. All right. Prof, we took a little longer than we had hoped for. Maybe that shows the keen interest that members have in assessing your suitability. What remains is for me to ask you if there is anything at all that you would want to ask this committee, or any remarks that you would like to make to the committee before we release you.
Well, thank you, Chair. I don't have any questions, Chair, to ask, but to thank the committee and you especially, Chair, for the kindness of considering me to come before this interview, and also to present myself. Please, if I've made any mistake, don't blame me, but blame the mistake that has come. Thank you very much.
We'll certainly remember that when we we make the decision. Thank you very much, Professor, and you are released.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, colleagues, as I had promised, we still need to do one interview. I hope that, thank you. I hope that the coffee will not turn cold in the meantime. I think it's in flasks. So can we get the next candidate quickly? Good morning, Mr. Mpumlana. Welcome to the ad hoc committee on the appointment of the public protector. May I start by congratulating you for having made the top eight candidates in the shortlisting process, and hence you invited to this interview. I am going to immediately kick off with a general question to you, and that is to say that it's well and good the committee thought you are a strong candidate and should feature amongst the top eight, but what is it from your point of view that you bring to the office that should confirm the suspicion that the committee had that you might be a good candidate for the position, in terms of your experience, in terms of your expertise? What is it that's special that you would be bringing to the office?
One of the most difficult questions to ask. Talk about yourself. I'm humbled by the picking, well, the committee, looking at the papers, not knowing who I am, and it's very difficult to talk about myself. I think you'd appreciate that. What I can say, not what I bring or what is it in me. As I said, it's very difficult. I can't talk about that. The only thing I can say is that what I think the office requires and what I think the office, the weak points in the weak points in the office presently, and then what I think it perhaps needs to concentrate on. I think it's a very, very important office. But at the same time, I think it's a very, very difficult office. It's supposed to be looking after the interest of the public. And it's supposed to be protecting the people of South Africa.
I have witnessed quite a lot of injustice and helplessness of the people, of ordinary people, sort of, without anybody to protect. As I say that, this is a very broad question you ask. It doesn't necessarily need, it needs some knowledge of law, of course, but I think it needs passion. It needs somebody with passion who will go out of his way to try and protect the people who are, who feel vulnerable. I'm not sure if I can go to analyze the problem that it's supposed to solve. Am I allowed to do so? The reason why there is the public protector, or in fact, the reason why there is I think in the Constitution, even the Bill of Rights, is because I think they are trying to reverse what has been going on for more than three centuries. And that is, initially, the definition of a person did not include the majority of the people of South Africa. There were Democrats in South Africa, but the people voted. But it depends what you mean by people. And that there were people who were not really people. And this is has been some kind of food, though it's poisonous food. Everybody regarded certain type of people as non-people. You had the civil servants behind the counter not regarding other people as important. And this goes further when it comes to the administration of justice and other organs of state. If you're wearing an overall and an underall, you are not likely to get the same treatment as somebody wearing a suit. If you don't speak English, your chances of success, you are not treated in the same manner. And I can go further. If you're a white person, you'll probably get a better treatment. There are many examples. Somebody, there were, well, at it, there were some white people who were raped in the Sigi Sigi, for example. And 10 helicopters from Durban came to hunt for those people. They were found within 2 weeks. They didn't go to the magistrate. They went straight before a judge, and they were given 25 years within 2 weeks. There is a village in Kumbu where women are being raped. I think about 40 of them, I had last week. There's a gunman who goes in to the hut at night, just rapes any woman who's staying alone there. Police know about that, and they do nothing about it. There is somebody, there's so many cases. What I'm trying to stress here is that who are you determines
whether you're going to get a fair treatment in government. And this is because you don't have civil servants. You have got civil masters. You've got people who are, in fact, it's almost the whole society. They are behind the counter because they are the bosses. Social security. You have to know somebody must go and help. I don't know how many cases I've represented the social development where you find somebody who is entitled to social. But they say, go and bring this, go and bring this. And the whole system, you are in town, and if you're staying about 100 kilometers away from town, you have to find money to go to the social development. And you'll find, come tomorrow, come next week, bring this and bring that. But if you are wearing a suit, or perhaps you can speak a little bit of English and you are a respectable somebody, you'll get a better treatment. Let's come to the question of the public protector. My observation, I may be wrong, is that it's an office that is concentrating mainly on the rich and the popular and the famous. There are cases that it investigates which are for the ordinary people. But mainly you get, with due respect, political parties trying to use it for their own personal interest. You get so-called NGOs that are also pushing whatever agenda they have. And then you have the public protector trying to get as much information from the ordinary people as possible. And what I say, I suggest, whoever isn't taken by the committee, that two things. One, there need to be a change in the approach, both of government and all other institutions, from top to bottom system to bottom up system. What do I mean by that? I mean, presently, the so-called intelligent people who are governing and those who are in public office think what is good for the ordinary people on the ground, and they plan for it. And then they dish it to him. But if you have got people on the ground who divide themselves, like, for example, if there was what you may call a human rights, they divide themselves into departments, and the present departments that are there, in each and every village. Then they get to know exactly what is happening in government, what are their rights within that particular system, department. And then there is what you may call a customer service. And they liaise with it on a frequently. This includes the public protector. Because I think you can go to the Nyanga or any of the local townships here and ask anybody, do you know a public protector? I'm sure you'd get very few people who know that. But this is in Cape Town, and there must be an office of the public protector in Cape Town. I don't know whether they know if there is such a. So What I would suggest to whoever is taken is that system of bottom-up way of government. And then you then are able to know exactly what the people need and what are their problems on the ground. It will be too expensive for the public projector to do it alone. It would be better if, as I say, each department has got what you may call customer care system. And then they get this and see if they can solve them. And also the public projector, perhaps if it works with the Public Service Commission, very closely, it may go a long way. The most vulnerable people, as I say, the problem is the crime. There are so many other things that are actually, on the one side, we have got structures like public protector, human rights, and so on, Chapter 9 institutions. On the other side, we have got the public broadcaster, where you can only see crime and violence and sex each time you open the TV. And the children are supposed, and we are crying that we say there is crime in the area. In other words, I see that how do we find if we are making a progress? How do we know if we are making the public protector is making a progress, and that the money that is spent on it is money well spent? How do we do that? We do that by saying where do we come from, what are we trying to achieve by this particular institution. And as I say to you, that we are trying to reverse what has been has been regarded as the attitudes of the people, how people have been treated, how they are being seen by the general public. I'm not only talking about the white people; they are more better than the black people on the other people, black people. If it depends who you are and where are you in the system or in the society. So we need to change that. As I say, that the way to find out how far we are going, and whether we then can gauge whether we're making a progress or not. We find it by one, the outreach, forming this particular structure, and getting to know that there is an improvement on the ground. My bias is, of course, coming from a rural area, very rural, is the people who are really on the ground, people in the township, people in the farm. It's normal that a farmer can beat up the farm worker at any time, and there's nothing he can do about it. And the public protector will, of course, eventually get information and do investigation. And, of course, this person doesn't have a place to stay. He has been in the farm for years. So, in other words, what I'm trying to say is that we gauge our progress by finding out what do we want to achieve. And we put a target and say, by such and such date or year, we would have done A, B, C, and D. And how do we gauge the progress? And then we say, at least we're making progress. And I think the committee in Parliament would then look into those things and find out how far we are. There's a lot that needs to be done. We're talking about reversing almost 350 years. And people have been drilled into a particular way of thinking. And their actions are determined by how they view things generally. So
what am I bringing to this? I don't know. I don't know. Genuinely. I'll do the best I can. If people have got confidence in me. I've been doing this, of course, without pay. I've represented quite a number of people without, but they don't have the money. There are many instances. I cannot just quote a few. There is, of course, the legal aid that is assisting. But as I say, there's a lot that still needs to be done. And I'm sure this is why Jesus Christ decided to die early. Because the people are very bad. The public protector needs to have some tentacles in the at least the outreach. Needs to have some offices in every part of South Africa, which of course is very expensive. But as I say, if it works with the departments and work with this particular section of the department, you probably will make some progress.
Yeah, thanks. I think that, in a sense, most of your input focuses on the institution itself and what is it that could be done to bring improvements. And I assume this is where you feel that your appointment would be able to make a contribution in. Can you say a little bit about a little bit more about your own training and experience, such that, you know, as a person, you would have the necessary capacity to achieve that?
Thank you. I think you probably have looked into my CV. I'm a lawyer by profession. I'll probably, in the contents of what is the justice, the system of justice in South Africa, then I also am an investigator. I do, even before I can go for any case, if I do have any case, I first do my own investigation before I go to court, because I always feel that the police will do their side and nobody does investigation for the defense. I do that. I've been in the TRC where we're investigating the atrocities of the previous government. And we did make some success in that investigation. The public protector needs, there is a lot of investigation that needs to be done within the institution. I think that, and also that what is important is also judgment. That is important, and impartiality, which is also very important. I can't say I'm impartial. I may not be as impartial as God is, I suppose, but I want to believe I'm very objective. I have a respect for people and their views, even if those views are against mine. I mean, they are not, they're contrary to my views. I do. I think I do. But some people may know me better than I do. I also have some kind of training in arbitration, in looking at to the so the impartiality. I think I am impartial, and I think I do have passion for the downtrodden people. I think I do. I think that is my weak point, if I may call it that way. It's my weak point. If the person is victimized, I go out of my way to do so. What else am I bringing to this institution? My experience and during my lifetime, I spent 25 years of my life without being paid a cent for the liberation of this country. I had a choice to do whatever I wanted to do, like other people. Despite that, I didn't look for any public office politically. I didn't want to be in parliament or to have any position in the or being an embassy or anything. precisely because I felt that it's I'm not saying people who do that is their choice. But I believe in that you sort of are confined to a particular thinking. If you are in parliament, I think you know better than I do. You are likely to draw a particular line when you take decisions in parliament, I suppose. Which it may be a correct decision, but you have to draw a particular line. But if you are independent and you say this is to me not correct, you have to go with it. But I still am a political animal, which is natural. I mean, I can't cut my tail and say I have never been, and I'm still not there. So I don't know what am I bringing. That is in me, as I say to you, that what I'm bringing to this institution is impartiality, which I think I have, skills of interpretation of the of law, knowledge and of justice, and more especially and more particularly, concentration of those who are really discriminated or downtrodden. And that's what I believe.
Maybe finally from my side, before I open to other colleagues, is to ask if there is anything to the best of your knowledge that might place this committee in doubt of wanting to select you over all the other candidates. And if there is, how do you explain yourself around it, if at all?
I don't know. You are asking if there is any skeleton in my cupboard.
Confession time.
I don't know. maybe I've forgotten, I don't. I'm not a young man. I'm sorry if somebody can remind me, I probably can explain. I have just come to offer myself to the nation. If the people feel that I deserve it, I'll take it with pride. But if they feel that I do not, I'll accept it. I have not come to look for a job. Not at all. I've come to offer my services. I've never looked for a job in my lifetime. I would say that here am I. I offer my services if people feel that they need my services. They think they have confidence in me, I'll do it. If they don't, so I will not. I find it difficult to litigate for myself.
I think you've answered it to the best of your ability.
Thank you.
All right. Where do we start? Mr. Dabani. Dabani, sorry. The secretary keeps on confusing my memory, you know.
Thank you, sir. I must have to say again, declare that I am no advocate for Mulwana. We have been colleagues for the last 10 years, up until May when I came here. That really has got nothing to do with this proceeding. Advocate Mulwana, because this office is already existing, that is, Office of Protector, do you feel is it doing a good job now? If you feel it is not, what strategies do you have that you may come up with to make it work? Secondly, in your CV, I have seen that you were or you are a strong member of ANC. According to the act applicable to this office that works against you to be employed or to be taken, what can you come up to this panel to waive that? You are a member, or you are a member of ANC.
Can you repeat this second question, please?
According to the law that is applicable to the Office of the Public Protector, the Public Protector must not be affiliated to any political party. So what can you come up with to this panel that it must waive that requirement?
Maybe before you answer, let me just contextualize this one, because I get to exercise discretion whether a question is fair or not. I think the context should be that a person in that office who is already an incumbent would have limitations when it comes to political affiliation. I do not think that it should be interpreted to mean that if you had come from a particular political background, irrespective of what that background is, that you could not be considered. And the reason for that being that one of the four criteria in the Act is that you could qualify by virtue of having been a member of parliament. And ordinarily, you wouldn't be a member of parliament who obviously represents a political party in parliament without having been an active member of that particular political party that you represent. So I just thought that before you answer, the context is properly clarified so that you do not, be confronted with a question in a manner that might be unfair. But you are allowed to proceed and answer the questions.
Yes. I think let me start with that question. Can I start with that, answer that question? Actually, I don't see why you people have got different political oppositions. I think it's just a way of, because you're all fighting to assist the same people, say, I'll do it better, I'll put it in better. More than competition, I think it has got money involved in it. It's a job. I don't know whether I'll answer it correctly. I am, was, and still am, a freedom fighter for the people of South Africa who were oppressed and who are still suffering the consequences of that oppression. The political party will have an agenda, but the agenda of the people of South Africa is justice, and that they should be treated as human beings. That's the agenda of the people of South Africa. The political party is a good thing. And if I am, don't deny, member of the ANC, still am, but I, as I said earlier, have not taken any position. Whoever is in the branch level, or whether it is in the provincial, or nationally. But I don't think that affects me when it comes to the people, what they, the dignity of the people, and what they, their rights are. And they have been there, these rights. It's not so international. It's no. What's a human being? How should be treated? What he's supposed to have? And I think that the Constitution only emphasizes what is there. I don't think that will affect me. Secondly, if I have not answered the question, you'll probably come back to me. The second thing is, what am I going to do? What strategy? The public protector has been there for about 14 years now, if I'm not mistaken. They were people who, there was a public protector, Mr. Barco, I think, and then the latter one who was your, the one who has just come in now. When you come into any position, the first thing you do is to ask, how far are you? What are your plans? What are your strategies? Because you're working with people. You've got to respect people. You've got to respect that what they think is the direction they're taking. I don't have much details as to how far they go. But what I've observed is that their presence is not felt right through the country. I suspect because every morning the newspaper will come up with something and they'll have to answer. An NGO will send something that they must investigate. Perhaps members of parliament and other organizations who know about the public protection institution. There is a progress which I think has been made in the past 7 years, 6 years. There are, I've observed some outreach. There's a progress on the outreach. There are offices now in all the provinces. There are also mobile clinics in certain areas. I think I'll improve on that. As I said earlier, I would encourage the people on the ground to form themselves, to be able to, so that we get in touch. There's a good thing that the president has done now, which is the telephone contact. A hotline, that's right. It's a hotline. It's very hot. They are receiving something like 6,000 calls per day or something like that. But who is calling? Who is calling? The elite. The elite. The people who first of all know about that. Who is calling? The people on the ground don't. Either they don't even have phones, they don't know. You know, in other words, you still have a bulk, a number of people who don't know about this, who don't even know they are right. So until what I'm trying to do is that I'll try and get down and get to those people. And that's my mission, if you people have got confidence.
On that note, Mr. Dapane, are you still, you covered? All right. I'm going to proceed to Mr. Honorable George and then come to Honorable Ramudipe.
Well, Chairperson, you will realize that probably I'm the only one who has not been confessing of knowing people deliberately. Because,
let's hear
you. Because in my previous life, where I was, I hold a lot of positions, national and everybody. So many people know me, and I know that I might not be my intimate. That's why I don't confess. I mean, if you look at all the people here, I know them. Even including, so I will not confess because I think confession means you have intimate knowledge.
Yes. All right. Proceed.
You advocate Mpumlwana. When you started by two sentences that followed each other. You said the public protector is supposed to be looking after the interests of the public. Wapinda, what it's supposed to protect the vulnerable. That already indicates that it does not do those things. And then you say it consists concentrating on the rich and being manipulated by political parties. Now, you also say it needs a bottom-up approach or to be introduced. So if I listen to this, you will help me because I want clarity. If I listen to what you, all the statements put together, of course you did say that it must have offices all over the state, but it might be expensive. But if you look at all what you are saying, in my understanding, it means you are saying if effectively the public protector must be completely overhauled. And if that is your view, I'm not judging it, I'm not saying it is wrong. If that is your view, how do you think you will go about doing what you want? Because you must understand it's an institution that is already in existence. So if looking at what you say, you seem to be saying it needs to go. I'll tell you why, Advocate Pumlwana. You know, you said you were the passion for the downtrodden. You know, in this country, all of us, I'm talking especially in 1994, we're excited, very excited. We're coming from the bush, we're coming from prison, we're coming from the trenches, we thought. But some of the things we found are still, in fact, more existing now. For let's make an example. You know, the government every year gives money to universities to help the poor. But who benefits from those from money? The most people who benefit from those money are more the elite than the poor. Because the very entrance, because those money to get it once you are at the university. And to get into that university, you need about 2,500 and so forth. So the money which was supposed to help the poor, instead you find I used to fight about that in the early 90s, mid 90s, where the MPs, their children apply for the bursaries in the universities, which are supposed to help the poor. So I'm saying I understand your concern with the system, but I'm coming back to this. We've been talking about this, but we've not been able. Now my question is, you seem to see what the public protector is supposed to be doing. You seem to be saying, if I'm getting it correct, it needs some overhauling. Now my question is, how do you hope to do this thing? Especially that you're talking about an institution that is already established, that is already having offices and everything.
Can I just encourage us to shorten and both in questioning and in responding, because time is becoming a bit of an enemy for us now. We are seriously behind time. Advocate, please proceed.
Overall, not really. Changes, when necessary, yes. I always say the team that doesn't score goals is useless. Bafana play very well. They didn't score goals. What, as I said earlier, what do you want to achieve? What is your where do you want to go to? When? How? Is the determining factor in everything you do. Is this system that is here doing that? And what are the weak points in it? How these can be strengthened? It's not like just coming into a room and say everything that is here is wrong. Everybody who has done anything before me is stupid. No, you don't do that. You sit with people and say, what is your strategic plan? For perhaps they might be having some strategic plan that goes to 2014, whatever. Even if, you know. And how are you going to reach your goals in this way? That is what you do. And, but as I say to you, that when I say it's supposed to be, I don't know where, how far they do that. But all I've noticed is that it is not yet known in very, I think you'll agree with me there. You can go to any rural place and ask if there is anybody knowing if there's an existence of either the public protector or human rights. The majority of South Africans don't know that. They don't even know that there is such a thing, let alone what it can do for them. So I'm saying that is a non-starter. And I say that if we need to improve on that. But I don't know what their plans. I'm not going to change their plans, but I'm going to look into if the plans are actually drive a good card to driving to the goal that it's supposed to be. Yeah. I don't know whether it's
All right, thank you. Honorable Ramandipa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Advocate Mpumulwana. I think we have been very honest with the committee when relating to your impartiality. And I think as a requirement of this job, that is the main, requisite of the, you know, the applicant to be impartial. And in your outline, you said you can't say you are not partial. Having said that, I think I want to thank you for your honesty with the committee. Now, can you please tell this committee as to whether you will be able to be partial should you be given this job, as I've already indicated that, you know, that is one of the requirements so that you maintain the independence of this institution.
I'm not sure if God is partial, impartial. I don't think so. I think he stands for what he believes to be true. This is the way I use the word impartiality. I come into a position. These are the requirements of this position. And if that position is in the interest of justice of my people, I'll take it. But if it is not, I will not take it. I will be impartial. I will not favor anybody. I will not say that this is my comrade or not my comrade, or this is, I go to church with this one and so on. This is my understanding of it. But if it is that you have got to make sure that, luckily, that thing is just to assist people who are being treated badly. And this is my understanding, baby. And I think that's my calling. But I am not going to say, this is how I say it. I am not going to say if the job needs A, B, C, and D needs to be done, and that job, in my conscience, is in the interest of my people. That's what I was saying.
Rabbi Ramdi?
No further questions, thanks.
All right. Did I notice any further hands at the table? All right. Thank you very much, colleagues. What remains then for me is to thank you for coming forward and accepting our invitation. Is there anything that you would want to ask the committee or any comment that you would want to make finally before we release you?
First of all, as I said earlier, I want to thank you. I felt humbled to be called in here. I'm not sure if I deserve it, but I really appreciate your having looked at it and say, perhaps you can hear me. I don't know any questions to ask you.
you. And on that note, you are released. Thank you. Colleagues and Advocate Mpumulane are all invited for a cup of tea. We'll break for a good 10 minutes and then we'll resume immediately thereafter.
I thought there were two meetings. Yeah, so I've been talking about Margot Zamut and Christine Tani. Just pass me, tell me, let's see, 5 minutes before the meeting. Hmm? Yeah, just pass me 5 minutes before I'll leave the meeting. No, we're having 5 minutes for each man. Yeah, sir.
Thank you. I've been putting my wife for 6 years and 10 years. Thank you. What was the finish? Whilst we are still in text.
Are all the Bafana Bafana players in? I hope he scores goals this time around. Because now we're heading for the finals. Eh? So we want gold. All right, are we ready to take the next candidate? Please bring him in. Mr. Mtembo, welcome. Sorry for keeping you. Things are moving slightly slower than we were hoping for. And may I, on this note, also congratulate you for having made it thus far. You are one of 8 candidates
who have been selected by this collective in front of you as best placed to contend for the position of public protector. But that's just their opinion based on what they read from your CV. And that leads to my very first question is, prove them right. What is it that you believe justifies them prioritizing you as deserving to be in the shortlist? What is it that you bring into the office of public protector in terms of your experience, your expertise, your skills, vis-a-vis what you believe to be the role and responsibilities of the office of public protector?
You can use your mic.
Thank you. Chairman and honorable members, I thank you for inviting me to appear before you and for giving me an opportunity to submit to you why I think and believe that I should be considered for this high office of public protector. Maybe just a context to my life. I was born and brought up within a very harsh environment in the grinding poverty of Dubaduba in KwaZulu-Natal. This is a rural community this is a poor rural community where people are not exposed to amenities we see in cities today. I believe it is this poverty coupled with the oppression which energized passion in me to seek education as the only relief. After completing a junior degree, I embarked on a program of articles of clerkship to qualify as an attorney. That was my initial step. I enrolled and admitted as an attorney, and thereafter worked with one of the best human rights lawyers we had in the country. That was Griffith Mklenge. I worked with Griffith Mklenge and K.K. Mtiane and Victoria Mklenge, who then introduced me to life in the struggle for the liberation. Why I'm mentioning this painful experience, Mr. Chairman and members? I want the chairperson and these honorable members to understand the perspective which I seek to bring to this high office of public protector if I am appointed. I felt I would like to enlist to this committee the devotion, the passion, and the devotion and dedication which I seek to bring in matters involving the protection and strengthening of democracy if I am appointed. Chairman, I want to quickly go on, if you may allow me, to my CV. I hope it has been circulated, members are aware of it. I will therefore make sure that I go fast. As I indicated, born in Dubaduba in KwaZulu-Natal. Presently, I am practicing as an advocate at the Durban Bar. I am a member of the Society of Advocates. The qualifications I have is a junior degree, a Bachelor of Law degree, and a senior degree, an LLB degree. I have a certificate in mediation. I am qualified as a mediator. I serve in the panel of IMSA. I believe the position of a public protector in other international jurisdictions, it is referred to as a mediator or a commissioner. In South Africa, we call it the public protector. I also did a certificate in diplomacy and diplomatic training in Zimbabwe in a program which was sponsored by the Commonwealth. I was admitted as an attorney on 26 October 1981 after practicing as an attorney for a period of, I think, more than 20 years. At my own request, I applied to have my name removed as an attorney and I applied to be admitted. I was admitted as an advocate. I've practiced as an advocate from then till now. So the total experience that as an attorney I practiced for over 20 years, as an advocate I practiced for 7 years, and I spent 1 year, was invited as a senior lecturer at the University of Durbanville. I was in the Department of Private Law. This CV is well known to members. I'll try to go fast. In 1984, I was awarded by the United States government in conjunction with Operation Crossroads Africa to study American legal institutions and jurisprudence. In 1994, this was a diplomatic training which was offered by the Commonwealth of Zimbabwe. 1995, I was on a program which was sponsored by the Kellogg Foundation, which is based in D.C. in Washington, to a program called Concepts and Challenges of Leadership, which is basically leadership. Well, I've mentioned mediation, that I'm a mediator. The part of mediation I specialize on is on community conflict dispute resolution. I have been blessed with being nominated for positions. For instance, I was a chancellor and chairperson of an institution, Amanzimtoti College of Education, called Adams College of Education. I was a senior lecturer in Westville in 1999. I was an election observer in 2004. That's my participation. Now, I come now to membership appointments, in statutory bodies and organizations. I try to run quicker. In February, the Minister of Transport appointed me to as a member of the KwaZulu-Natal Interim Minibus Taxi Tribunal. This was important because at this time, KwaZulu-Natal was in the grip of violence, taxi violence. We tried to allay the violence. I was a member of the, in 1998, the KwaZulu-Natal Tender Appeals Tribunal. In other words, we sat as an appeal court for appeals for people who have been denied tenders or for other problems. In 2001, I was invited by, I think it's Advocate Jules Proud, who was chairperson of the Broadcasting, Monitoring, and Complaints Committee of ICASA, to serve as a member. I served as a member of the Rental Housing Tribunal. I was a member of the KwaZulu-Natal Law Society, a member of NADEL, a member of the PLA, and I still am a member of the Society of Advocates. I also, in 2009, was appointed as chairperson and presiding officer to hear and determine tax appeals in the Tax Appeal Court. I quickly now come to judicial appointments. In 1997, I was appointed by the Minister of Justice as a commissioner in the Small Claims Court. Thereafter, on invitation by various judges, I sat as an assessor. 2005, I was appointed also by the Minister of Justice as a regional court magistrate. I acted in that position in various regional jurisdictions like Mpangeni, Durban, Kokstad, Harding, Maloot, Richards Bay. I served also as a regional court magistrate in serious commercial crime court. I continue, if invited, to act as a regional court magistrate. In 2007, I was appointed by the Minister of Justice to act as a judge, an acting judge, in the Ciskei High Court. After that, again in 2008, was an appointment between April and May as an acting judge in the Transkei High Court. In 2008, again, June, acting judge in the High Court in Bishop, Saskai. And in September, again, I went back as an acting judge in the Transkei. Again, the acting judge president wanted me to act in the month of April as an acting judge in the Transkei. I continue to act in these positions whenever called. The commission, I have sat as a chairperson of one person commission of inquiry.
Into what is the totality of the acting stints that you've had as a judge, acting judge? A composite period.
How many are they?
No, in terms of the total time period.
Time period.
That amounts to roughly.
The problem, I think, is that whenever you act and you finish the slot of cases you have, the acting position lapses. You then have to be appointed again, take an oath, and continue to act. All I can say is that in January 2007, I acted from February, the month of February, that was in the Saskai High Court. And then in April 2008, from April to May for 2 months, I was acting judge in the Transkei Division. In 2008, it was from 17 June to 20 June, that's about 2-3 weeks. In 2008, again in September, in the Transkei, it was for 1 month of September. In 2009, in April, it was in Mthatha High Court, where I was acting in the month of April. That is the totality of my acting.
I could roughly estimate it as something in the region of half a year or so.
That's fine. I continue now. Commissions of inquiry. I have sat as chairperson of one person committee of inquiry into problems experienced in the Department of Health in Amajuba District. The second commission was, I sat as chairperson and a commissioner of the Commission of Inquiry into problems relating to the appointment of a municipal manager of Umsunduzi Municipality, which is Peter Marisberg. I continue to sit and preside and adjudicate, resolve objections, complaints, and queries and appeals relating to tenders in Umgeni Municipality. Summary, just to make a summary of this, Mr. Chair, my view is that on the basis of these qualifications, the training and the experience, I submit to this committee that I would not have been blessed with the kind of appointments that I cited if I was not a fit and proper person. Now, going to the ad that came up calling for advertising this position, in terms of the criteria for the recommended person for appointment, I believe I'm suitably qualified, Mr. Chair, and experienced, and an experienced person. I do have the reputation of honesty and integrity. Serving in the varying capacities set out in my CV, I think I've shown impartiality in the performance of my official duties, and have exercised my official functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. Chair, coming now to the position of public project, the specific mandate of the public projector, his functions and powers are located within three pieces of legislation, The first one is the Constitution of South Africa, 108 of 1996. The second one is the Public Protector Act, 23 of 1994. And the last one is the Executive Members Ethics Act, 82 of 1998. Chairman, let me begin by addressing this on the question of the dealing with the Constitution. The Constitution of South Africa Act, as we know, is the supreme law of the Republic. It guarantees every citizen of the Republic certain fundamental rights of democracy. The protection and strengthening of constitutional democracy in a democracy, in a democratic state like South Africa, or in any democracy in the world for that matter, requires that certain institutions which function as pillars of democracy should be created to protect and strengthen the democracy. The Public Protector is one such institution. Section 182 of the Constitution prescribes, this is well known to members, prescribes the mandate of the Public Protector. I'll go to the three points which I think are most important: to investigate and conduct state to investigate any conduct in state affairs or in the public administration, in any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper or result in impropriety or prejudice. Having then investigated, to report on that conduct. And the third aspect is to take appropriate and remedial action. Mr. Chair and members, let me share my misgivings about Chapter 9 institutions. Maybe because my background is from court. In my view, they don't have teeth. They do not bite these institutions. For instance, the chairperson, the public protector, is called upon to take appropriate and remedial measures. What are those measures? I do not know. They are not set out where you could say, if someone commits this breach of the Constitution, these are the penalties. But, Mr. Chair and honorable members, understanding that you know, dealing with matters which fall in the domain or within the ambit of the Constitution, an appropriate remedial action would be, in my belief and in my own construction of the interpretation, any action that restores the constitutional imbalance which is caused by or created by such an improper conduct. I move on now to the national legislation. In the national legislation, the public...
But just on the on that point, I may be inclined to share with you, I may be inclined to share your sentiments with regard to the teeth there, whether that mouth has enough sharp teeth or not. But isn't it so that we do not necessarily have to bite ourselves, but we can unleash the dogs to do the biting for us? Is that not another way of achieving the same outcome?
You may be right, Chair. But dealing with human beings as we are, we're human beings, we're human. There must be a stick somewhere. We must draw a line somewhere. We are dealing with a constitutional right. We're dealing with prescriptions of the Constitution. We're dealing with something as important as strengthening the Constitution uses the word strengthens democracy, but the Act puts it quite correctly. It says protect. Now, if you strengthen, you need to protect. How can you protect if you don't have teeth? But why I say I agree with you, Chair, because if you are dealing with matters relating to the Constitution, which fall in the domain or ambit of the Constitution, maybe you do not need teeth because you are merely mistaken action which restores the imbalance, the imbalance which is created by an improper conduct. In that aspect, I may agree with you. Let me come now, Chair and Honourable Members, to the Public Protector Act 23 of 1994. In its preamble, I will summarize. It provides for additional powers and functions of the Public Protector. Whilst it rehashes the words of the Constitution, but it tries to broaden it, to investigate matters and to protect the public. That is what is missing from the Constitution, protection of the public against matters such as maladministration in connection with affairs of government, improper conduct by any person performing a public function, improper acts with respect to public money, improper and unlawful enrichment by a person performing a public action, a public function, acts and omission by a person performing a public function which results into the improper conduct of prejudice to another person. Clearly, many people, maybe it's because many people, black and white, died for this democracy. That's why, members, it has to be protected. And I think the huge responsibility lies on us who still aspire to serve in the position as a public protector to utilize all the constitutional, legislative, and other measures at our disposal to protect it. That's why there are these acts, the Constitution, the Public Protector, the Executive Members Ethics Act, to protect the democracy. Mr. Chair, having briefly sketched these functions, I'm sure they are well known to members. Allow me to, I don't know if this is correct, but members, I'm in your hands, to make these unfavorable observations about the Office of the Public Protector. The Office of the Public Protector suffers from a crisis of invisibility. Office of the Public Protector is invisible in the eyes of the wider South African public. Yet we have this instrument, Section 184, I think it's subsection 4, I'm not sure, but I think it's subsection 84 for 182, which provides a specific mandate that the Public Protector must be accessible to all persons and communities. But as I stand here, I can submit to you that it is not known by South Africans. People do not know what is the Office of the Public Protector. Where is it located in the length and breadth of South Africa? How does it function? What is its function? I think, Mr. Chair, for the Office of the Public Protector to perform properly and appropriately on its mandate, its services must be known to the people. People do not know, our communities do not know the services of the Public Protector. I can go on, Mr. Chair, if I'm not wasting time, to say that government departments spend large sums of money to a worrying degree advertising certain things in the department. We see a lot of money being spent on advertisement. Yet, I hardly come across one or two advertisements by the public protector. Advertising and publicizing in our communities, this important Chapter 9 institution, which is the pillar of our democracy. I hardly see that. The small claim court is a court of poor people, and the jurisdiction is 7,000. Poor people interact in that court. I served in that court as a commissioner. It is much more popular to our people than the Office of the Public Protector, the small claims court. The maintenance court, for instance, a small court where people go for maintenance for children. It's much more popular than this pillar of democracy called the public protector. The rational court
is because they have teeth and they can bite.
Well, it also depends. For instance, with the small claims court, poor people go there for claims of 7,000, 3,000, 4,000. You know, they go there. You get there, the clerk of court does everything freely. The commissioner, I sit there freely. No one pays the government. It's just a service to the people. Now, it's not because they've teeth that they are popular. It's because it's important to have a child maintain their father. The rational court, for instance, when it started, it suffered the same problem of invisibility. It was invisible. But as time goes on, it eventually surmounted the hurdle of invisibility. I want to come now to what is known as, I think, the strategic objective for the Office of the Public Protector for the year 2008-2009. What I've learned is that the Office of the Public Protector has got four programs. This is what I found out. One is the investigation and reporting. Then there is executive management. Then there's an outreach program. And the last one is corporate support services. If I look at these good programs, I think there's one missing. Once the decisions are done of the public protector, they are reported. These four programs suggest they must lie in the book. There's no monitoring. I don't see an arm for monitoring. I didn't see an arm for implementation. If I sit in the High Court and convict someone for life, the correctional services will do their bit to ensure the implementation and that he serves the sentence. The decisions of the public protector are so important in my view that honestly and surely there must be an implementation of them. So the four programs that I saw, in my view, they need...
In your view, who should actually implement the decision?
I think the public protector should ensure that there's that arm, that the decision is written, is circulated, and then there must be an arm within the public protector itself. The public protector has the independence. Mm. Well, I think it has a budget. I don't know how to...
Well, let me put it this way. I chair in my other life the Standing Committee on the Auditor General. And I'm sure you'd agree with me that in the public sector, there's nobody who does not know the Auditor General. I think even in the general public, because once the Auditor General is on your case, then you know that you must start jumping, or start learning how to jump, just in case you may need that skill. But the reality is that the Auditor General, like the public protector, ultimately reports to Parliament, and that's it. He has no powers of enforcing his findings. The findings there may be even more serious because they may relate to embezzlement of give proof of existence of fraud, of corruption, which could actually amount to
serious criminal offenses, but still they don't have teeth in the sense of prosecuting or disciplining anybody they find against. And yet they have so much guilt and so much this awe around them. What is it that makes it different in the case of a public protection?
Maybe we would spend more time arguing, running around this issue of whether there must be teeth or not in the church. But once a decision which is reached after hearing evidence, after people have given evidence, and it's taken on the basis of the law, I think it's not proper for it to lie waste in the police or in cases. There needs to be some monitoring and implementation of the decisions of the public protection. They are so important to strengthen and protect the democracy. I think we come back to the question I raised, that I raised the question about the remedial action as to who knows what it is. The Constitution merely talks about appropriate remedial action. I don't know what it is. Nobody knows. We only look for an action that will restore, I think, the imbalance, because if you disturb the democracy, the workings of democracy, then we restore that, then that is all. We don't have teeth, as I say.
If you were to be appointed, confronted with that limitation, obviously giving more clarity in the law may be a long-term project. But in the meantime, you will be the public protector. You would have to live up to this constitutional injunction that says you must take remedial action. What would you do?
I am saying, and I repeat, within the limitations you have outlined, the sentence or the sanction would be a remedial action, would be a remedial sentence, which restores the balance, the constitutional balance. Whether it should be found on the facts of the case, or whether it would be found in the argument, but it has to be found, because we know we are dealing with an entity which does not have teeth, and this entity is a constitutional prescription that we should find a remedial action. That is how I think.
That's right.
Chair, I move on to the first arm of these four programs of the current office of the public protection. It is an office.
You don't need to deal with them in any elaborate way.
I'll just
give a very quick.
The office of the public protector is driven in the main by investigation and reporting. It needs, I think, effective, efficient, informed, timers, and high-quality investigations, considering the type of people who the type of offenses, if I may call them, offenses that are committed. Therefore, quality of investigations and investigators is crucial for the office to perform and deliver on its specific mandate envisaged in Section 182, Subsection 4. The Office of the Public Protector must ensure the development of a strategy on skilling and skills diversification of investigators. I imagine, this is my own imagination, a complaint involving complicated transactions involving financial transactions or an actuarial
report, then the investigators, even though they can source the expertise for a particular case, but I think they must be trained and trained and trained on an annual basis. We as advocates still go for training for ourselves to keep up with the development. The other program which I think is important to me, which I must share with the committee, is the outreach program, even though we're out in terms of time. Chair and honorable members, this is a program which I consider to be closer to my heart. I have a passion for this program. It seeks to address the mandate set out in subsection 4, that there must the public protector must be accessible to all peoples and communities. One, the outreach program will increase the accessibility of the Office of the Public Protector Services. It will really raise public awareness. It will increase access, that the services will be taken to the people. Mr. Chair, I am longing for a day when the Office of the Public Protector will be set out in a township. I can say this to take it far up as to say, even if I'm not appointed as Public Protector, but as a South African, I'll say the Office of the Public Protector must be at least in one township. When the legal aid, I was there when the legal aid first came into this country. It was in all the cities. Our people had to leave Mlazi, go to the legal aid, and then come back to court with a lawyer from the city. These are poor people. Why not take it today, legal aid, you have it at Mlazi, you have it in Wamashu, you have it in Late, you have it in Kailisha, everywhere. I was surprised. I went to Mwelezane Township in Panga and it's there, legal aid office. Why not with the public protector? Why not? I don't have the answer. Maybe the committee will finish me with an answer. Why not? It will increase awareness. People will see the office
there. Well, if you get appointed, you'd have to provide the answer yourself. But, yeah, let's move on to the next one.
Thank you. I hope I will be appointed, and I'll try to find an answer. What I know, Chairman, is that the mobility of highly skilled and qualified people causes a serious problem in any institution. But I was heartened to learn that the Office of the Public Protector has implemented the first phase of the occupation specific dispensation in order to retain those skills of highly qualified people. The other aspect for which I wanted to commend the Public Protector is what I learned when I Googled them is that since its inception in 1994, it has never had a qualified audit report, but in the financial year, I think it's 2007-2008, there was a qualification relating to a minor issue. They called it narrative and valuation assets. But I think it has to do with the contract between the public protector, a lease contract between the public protector and Department of Public Works.
I want to quickly come now to another legal arm, the investigation of the Bedford. The executive member's ethics and 82 of 1998. This is another act. This is another act which where the mandate of the public protector is created. It enforces strict compliance with standards and rules prescribed by the Code of Ethics aimed at promoting open, democratic, and accountable government with which cabinet ministers, deputy ministers, and ministers must comply with the format of their duty. This is where the church will differ with you when you say you don't need to. If you look at the caliber of people who are described here, now, the code aspires these people at all times to act in good faith and the interest of good government. They must meet all the obligations imposed on them by law. It prohibits these people from, I'll recite it as a difficulty, undertaking any other paid work, acting in a way that is inconsistent with their office, holding themselves to situations involving the risk of a conflict between their official position and their private position, using their position or information entrusted to them to enrich themselves or anybody else, or acting in a way that may compromise the credibility and integrity of their office or of the government. Now, these people are called upon to declare any financial interest acquired before and after the assumption of office, gifts, sponsored foreign travel, and the problem in the legislation is that sponsored foreign travel. If it says sponsored travel, whether foreign or domestic, now if you canalize foreign, what is and leave out domestic, then there is a problem there. Pension, hospitality, and other benefits of the natural nation. This is what they are declaring. The public protector has a mandate to enforce this. Those are the three pieces of legislation where I think the mandate and the power and function.
Thank you very much for that elaborate and yet informative response. Just before I hand you over to the rest of the members, is there anything that you'd want yourself to declare which you think might have an adverse effect on the committee's inclination to prefer you as the ideal candidate for the position, and if so, how do you explain yourself around that specific issue? It's a confession session.
What do you mean, Chair? What to declare?
It's not a very specific question. It's a general question. It's subject entirely to your own discretion. It's not a prescribed question. There's no legal requirement that says you need to declare any specific thing. I'm merely asking if there's anything somewhere in the back of your drobe somewhere which you think you might want to bring up front, volunteer to mention and explain yourself around it, if any, of course.
I think I don't have anything to declare.
All right. Okay, that's good enough. All right, colleagues. Do you want to ask any further questions? Honorable Michael, and then I'll call, I'll be followed by Honorable Ndabani.
Thank you, Mr. Sengu. I have a two-part question. My first part question is, as someone who is as versed in the legal field as you are, why stand as public protector and not stand for for permanent position as a judge, because I see that you've been an acting judge.
Yes.
So why? Because, you know, if you were successful in becoming the public protector, your tenure would be for 7 years. So why did you choose public protector over perhaps permanent employment as a judge, sitting judge on the bench? That's my first question.
Yes.
And my second question is, you're obviously a very disciplined man, and that comes across in the way you understand the Constitution, you understand the role of the public protector. Now, how would you handle a conflict situation between you and the Minister of Justice if you sat down and told the Minister of Justice that you felt the public protector had no teeth, and he obviously disagreed with you? How would you bring across your point of view to the Minister of Justice?
Thank you. As for the first question, which relates to why not asking or forcing, trying to get a permanent position in the bench. I have been invited on several occasions, I must say this, to apply, make myself available in the bench. I have not thus far. Maybe in future I will. why is my preference for a public protector? I kept on harping that this is the democracy for which most of our people
I'm terribly sorry. I'm being called out to what seems a bit of an emergency. Could someone else ask a question and then perhaps get the answer for that while I just quickly slip out? I don't want to miss the answer.
No, that's fine. We'll take over for
you. Yeah.
All right. Yes, please.
thank you, Mitchell. I've been hoping that the democracy we enjoy, we are mindful that many people sacrificed for it. And I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I enjoyed constitutional law at campus. I was a course coordinator for jurisprudence. with the public protector, your service is to the people of South Africa in this important area, this pillar of our democracy. I think every lawyer, it would be a passion of every lawyer to participate in this area of the law by protecting and strengthening democracy, using all the legislative instruments, public protector, the constitution, executive, ministers, ethics act, to protect the constitution, something we value so much. I think I have got that answer. Coming to the second question, how would I handle the conflict between the Minister of Justice and I? I don't know if I, frankly, the members will know that I'm speculating on this question. The situation has not come before me. I'm not yet confronted with that question, but if I'm confronted with that question, I think the Minister of Justice runs the department. He understands. He understands that this is an important position for public protector. It's a very high office because it involves protecting and strengthening something for which all many people really laid their lives. I can remember one person who laid himself for this democracy, who was always next to me. That was Griffith Mclean. There are many others. The other one was the children, and he was next to me. I didn't go to his funeral. I did not go to his funeral, I'm sorry, because I was asked to go to a show and do do Mutlanga's matters so that and apologize to the rational court. I remember there was a case of murder he had to do at the Shaw Rational Court. I went there. I was told by the family, Mike Mutlanga has respect for you. Go and defend that matter. I went there. These things raise emotions. That's why.
Take your breath. Take your time. Okay.
The democracy, one lawyer said to me, democracy is not just an entity that you can dangle around. It's something for which so many people, that's why I feel so strong, members, about our people seeing on television the Office of the Public Protector when it's not there, when it doesn't live with them. I think the Minister of Justice, coming back to give an answer, is a man who has these responsibilities and trusted these responsibilities. If a conflict has to occur, assuming I'm blessed, I'm appointed as a public protector, I'm not going to fear to go before a minister and say to him, these are the requirements of this office. This is an important office. I hoped initially that we see a lot of money spent to a warring degree. Money going for advertisement. MEC for this. MEC for this one. We see it even in buses, in taxis, pinned advertisements, which are paid for by the money of the South Africans. Is that fair? There is an important entity. The Constitution calls upon us as South Africans to protect the democracy. For the fact that we know we've got people who died supporting this democracy, to strengthen it would be good to have all those monies. I still say, the Office of the Public to advertise and using that. It should also go that route as well, I suppose. I suppose that is how I will handle the issue between the Justice Minister and myself. Thank you.
Honorable George?
Advocate Ntembu, you seem to emphasize the point that the public protector does not have teeth.
Yes, sir.
Because he believes that it does not implement. But that's how government is structured. Government operates like that. I mean, parliament is a very important structure in government. It makes law. But parliament does not implement law. There is another structure, like the police, which must see to it that the laws Parliament make are enforced. Department must see, or departments see to it that. So, I don't understand, you see, because I agree with you 100% that this is an important office, but to think that this office can be everything, I'm not sure whether you, because once you do that, you would also be tampering with this mandate. So that's why I'm saying, I'm worried about. I agree with the issue of advertisement publication, but once you want it, I'm worried that probably that's why that question comes. Because surely, if you're going to come with that thing, that now it must go beyond it. Because if you follow your argument, because in terms of the Constitution, it must investigate. It does not even give judgment like in court. It makes recommendations. And unfortunately, that is in terms of the Constitution and everything. How do you expect it now to go beyond that?
Yes, sometime. Proceed.
The point about chief is a point I must emphasize because it worries me. I'm stating as a point that worries me. But I'm not married to teeth, so that there should be teeth all the time. I'm not married to it. If for lack of better expression, Baba, I take your advice. I take the wisdom you're giving me, that Parliament works like that. I am not a politician, but all I see now and what I'm learning is that if you deal with matters within the ambit of the Constitution, all that you have to do, if an imbalance, I call it an imbalance, if someone breaches, for instance, the Executive Members Ethics Act, if you commit that offense, all that can happen to the public protector is to make a recommendation. And that recommendation will have to take this fact into account, that you can't go beyond what is there, what is within the power of the public protector. I can't simply sanction someone to a sentence of imprisonment. It's not there. Legislation doesn't provide for it. Therefore, I have to live within the confines.
But isn't what Honorable Judge, exactly what Honorable Judge is saying, that of course it should be like that because it is not the responsibility of public protector or similar institutions to actually enforce. That lies elsewhere. But that does not necessarily mean that if a problem is identified by the public protector, action should not be taken. The question is, who is the most appropriate authority or institution to take such action after the public protector has made a finding?
Honorable
Judge?
I just wanted to ask you, do you know the impact of somebody, for instance, if you just look at a department, If the Auditor General says you have a qualified, the impact of that in that department and even to the public, the same with the public protector. If the public protector pronounce negative, the impact it has. So I just wanted to say that without implementation, the mere fact that anybody who says to the public protector, that person is civil. Because the negative recommendation or a pronouncement by the public protector has got an impact.
Yeah. All right. That's good.
Just add to what Honorable George has said. I know how to work, Baba. I have had the experience to work within the framework of the Act, no matter how painful. I know how painful it is to see a criminal who has committed heinous, brutal murder when you don't find the evidence presented by the police. I know how it pains you to have to look at the relatives, friends, and family members and say to them, I find this man not guilty. They do not understand the law. They do not understand how the law works. But because I have to work within the framework of the evidence before me, there is absolutely nothing I could do, no matter how painful it is. At one instance, I can share with this committee, I couldn't sleep. I had to go and see a doctor. But I couldn't see a man who has committed the kind of crimes where people come and rape a wife at home, they rape a family, they rape girls, and then they shoot and kill all of them. Now, if those people have to be acquitted because the police doesn't give you the instrument to convict them, what can I do? Nothing. I'm saying this to emphasize the point that it's just good to know that in some instances, you learn to work within the framework of what you have. So, Honorable George, I think I understand this, and I will learn to work within the framework of these legislative instruments that are there. What is good is the legislative instruments are there before the public protector. He says, got to navigate them and find a way and work with them as a team.
I think the spirit in which you're saying it is that people want to see results, people want to see outcomes, and that irrespective of whether we have teeth here or have teeth there, but where injustice has occurred, some restoration needs to occur. I think that's the essence of what you're really trying to convey across. Colleagues, we are really running into serious time pressures. We still have one interview. Is there anybody who still feels strongly they would want to ask a question? I wouldn't want to suppress anybody despite time constraints. Yes, Honorable Ndabane.
Advocating them in the outreach program you have in mind, you have already said that there have to be offices where people are. What other mode can you come up with except building offices?
Why putting a building itself is not going to assist the public protector from this crisis it has of being invisible. I think workshops are very important tools. Pamphlets, visiting the people, community organizations, organizations of civil society, enlist the media as a partner to spread the work of this institution. Link up with other Chapter 9 institutions. There is now a call center, which is, I understand to be, was opened by the president. And I'm sure the Office of the Public Protector will get some complaints referred to it from that call center which the president opened. Some of the complaints will definitely come via the way to the Public Protector. Besides a building, because to just put up a building without doing research, I said put up structures. I meant, obviously, there must be research done. Look at the area. You can tell an area that is fertile. For instance, the farming community, where farmers do as they like, where you find a farmer who is a rational court magistrate, a district magistrate, is a farmer, is a businessman, is everything in the area. We've come across that situation. We build not only structures to those people, but we link up with society, especially the community. It's unfortunate that we, people who come from rural areas, see things that people who see in cities may not understand. I'm saying this with all humility. If you go to an old lady out at my place in Tubatuba in the rural area and ask them, look, there are these problems. What do you think we should do? The community people, with their wisdom, with their experience, they will tell you and they will not deceive you. In most instances, they'll say, if you set up a structure here, this is what will happen. They will lead you. Talk to Amakosi, talk to the chief, talk to everybody. They will lead you, they'll give you the way, and you will see your way through that. It is important. You can set up a structure here. It will be supported by civil society, schools, teachers, community people. Because it's not good to say to them, we have an office of the public project. I know that it is all in all the citizens. No way. No, don't know what state is in the council. Where most of the people who should enjoy the service reside. Now, it creates a problem for me. I don't know whether I answered it. Yeah. If I haven't answered you well,
I am sure Honorable Ndabane is satisfied. And on that note,
Can I, Mr. Chairman? had said this word on that note. Can I put one question?
I'm getting there.
Sure, thank you.
Allow me. Yes, I do not know if there are any other members who still feel strongly that there is a point that they want to pursue.
No.
We're all comfortable. All right. Well, thank you, members, for the questions that you have asked. It is now the opportunity of Advocate Tembo to ask the committee any question that you would want to ask before it makes a decision, as well as any comment that you may want to make before we release you briefly. You can use your mic, yeah.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. I've got only one question. I read the report of the Public Protector, the last report. It says there is a threat to the independence of the Public Protector. I don't know whether it talks about a threat to the independence of this office. So if members can enlighten to what threat that is perceived to be across the independence of the Public Protector. What threat?
Well, let me indicate that the mandate of this ad hoc committee, it is called an ad hoc precisely because it is there for the time being, and its mandate is limited to performing only one task, and that task is to recommend to the House as to who should be the ideal candidate. Now, there are other structures within Parliament who are specifically entrusted with the responsibility of considering. For example, I chair the Standing Committee on the Auditor General, but my committee does not consider the reports of the Auditor General. That's done by another committee called PSCOPA, Standing Committee on Public Accounts. That's the committee that lays the red carpet for the DGs to come and account. So I am sure that the relevant parliamentary committees at a given point would call the Public Protector to come and account or explain the concern and take appropriate action to correct that. But the bottom line is that the Constitution enlists all other organs of state to ensure the independence to assist the institution in executing tasks and never to interfere. And that is the bottom line. So if there is a threat, Parliament must investigate it and must act on it. It's as simple as that. But on that note, thank you very much for availing yourself. As Chairperson, I wish you all the best. I hope this collective that's sitting in front of you will, arrive at the best possible decision. And if you are the successful candidate, I really hope that you'd be able to execute the work of Public Protector with the kind of enthusiasm that you've displayed. Thank you very much.
Chairman and members, thank you very much for listening to me making noise. I'm related to you for just giving me a hearing.
All right.
And inviting me to make this submission.
All right. Colleagues, we're not going to break for lunch. We're going to proceed straight away to the last candidate, and hopefully the kitchens will not be closed by the time we finish with that candidate. It's now 10 to 1 according to mine, so hopefully by 1:30 we'll be done. Can we get the next candidate?
Can we get the next candidate? Can we use the opportunity as the candidate is still stretching her legs to also stretch ours? Let's give ourselves a good 5 minutes or so to just stretch and, yeah. I don't know if they've taken away all the coffee.